Well, it's the beginning of a new week and one where there's no baseball. We are in the midst of the off season right now, and we are doing a crossover. We're going to be handing out awards. We're going to be making predictions, and we're going to be reviewing the team that's on everybody's mind. That's the Arizona Diamondbacks. We're doing a Locked On MLB, Locked On Diamondbacks crossover.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I am your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Check it out. You can always call me Sully. This episode is being dropped on the 14th day of November, 2022. And we're here doing a crossover with Mr. Baja Galoop over there, the host of the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast. What's your name, sir?
I am Miller Thomas, host of the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast. Like you just said, you could follow me on Twitter if you want, at CreatorThomas24 if you want to get around to it. You can follow the show account, Locked On Diamondbacks, Twitter, Instagram, and like all the other Locked On hosts. We are also on YouTube, Locked On Diamondbacks there as well. We're getting close to 200 subscribers, so please go ahead and subscribe on YouTube.
By the way, my apologies for last week's episode that we did with the two of us where there was a little bit of a sync issue. Millard was perfectly synced, but I set mine to Godzilla movie where my mouth didn't exactly match the sounds going through. Is that a dated reference? Does anyone know where the Godzillas, they used to poorly dub them and people's mouths would be moving and it would have nothing. There was no correlation between the sound and the dialogue you heard and, you know, Godzilla, you know, that sort of thing.
I've seen all the old classics, Sully, but they also just came out with the reboots in the last few years too. Godzilla versus King Kong. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did. I mean, and I saw the one with Heisenberg. I saw the one, Godzilla King of the Monsters, which I had a really fun time watching because it had some of my favorite Godzilla. I grew up on Godzilla films, so you saw like really good quality. You know, Godzilla and Rodan and Mothra and King Ghidorah were four of my favorite monsters from those movies. You had a wonderful cast, including, you know, the coach from Friday Night Lights and Eleven from Stranger Things. Do you know where? So you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Boston, and two things were constant. I was watching the Red Sox on Channel 38, and I was watching Creature Double Feature with Godzilla films on Channel 56. Where do you think the final battle of Godzilla King of the Monsters took place?
I'm going to guess Japan.
Over Fenway Park in Boston. Ooh. It was a complete Voltroning of everything of my childhood in one movie. So you're darn right I enjoyed that film. You're darn right I enjoyed that film. But this is not Locked On Godzilla, which, by the way, I could probably do. This is Locked On MLB, Locked On Diamondbacks crossover. Hey, we are in the middle of, we're just starting the offseason, and there's one last piece of business to take care of the 2022 season. The victory parade, I always consider to be like, that's the end of Star Wars when they're handing the medals out to Luke and Han and eventually to Chewie. I think he had his mail. But, and that's one of the, you know, that's like the finale of the season. But then there are the awards and there are finalists. I did a whole thing the other day where I feel we should have a awards ceremony like the Oscars or, you know, the Emmys or even the ESPYs, where we hand them out the day before the World Series starts. We should know who the MVP is during the World Series and everything like that. And it makes it less confusing because you know that people, well, hey, why did Dusty Baker win? He won the World Series. The regular season awards, everyone, it's less confusing. But let's, I made some of my predictions before. I want to hear some of your predictions. And so let's go through the finalists. I like that they have finalists. Let's go through the Manager of the Year ones first.
All right.
And I guess I didn't make my predictions. I picked who I think should win, I guess. So I haven't made my predictions. So Terry Francona of Cleveland, Brandon Hyde of Baltimore, Scott Servais of Seattle are the three finalists in the AL Manager of the Year. Who do you think will and who do you think should win?
I'll be honest. If you asked me before the finalists came out who the manager of Baltimore was, I don't think I would have given you an answer. I don't think I really knew who Brandon Hyde was. So good shout out to him that he's a finalist, because I had no idea who that was before seeing this. But if I had to give out the AL Manager of the Year award, I think it's really simple for me. I love Terry Francona. Like, you and I grew up Red Sox fans, so big soft spot for Tito. But I think I have to give it to the guy who broke the longest playoff drought in sports history, or what we just saw with the Seattle Mariners. So I have to give to Scott Servais. Maybe he wasn't even as good as a Terry Francona, but if you could lead a team that hadn't made the postseason like over 20 years back to the playoffs and actually have like a pretty good run when you get to the playoffs, I'm going to give it to Scott Servais for this year.
All right, I think he's going to win. If I had the vote, I'd say Francona, because they were a team that was bottom five in payroll and were tied with Minnesota for first place going into Labor Day. And they just bombarded Chicago and Minnesota and won with a week to spare. And I think the fact he was able to do that with a bargain basement team, I would give it to Francona, but I agree with you, it's going to go to Servais. And I have no problem with it going to Servais. I think what Francona did was terrific, especially being handcuffed by that payroll. The National League is strange because this is the one where people go, what? Because it's a regular season award. Dave Roberts of Los Angeles, Buck Showalter of the Mets, and Brian Snitker of Atlanta. Who do you think?
I mean, the Dodgers had one of the greatest regular seasons of all time, but I look at the talent on paper, like, that's a team that should win that many games. So for Dave Roberts, I don't think the level of difficulty is really there. Brian Snitker, I thought he did an amazing job. The Braves are maybe the best team in baseball the last three-fourths of the season, but I'm going to give it to Buck Showalter of the New York Mets, because I felt like he changed the culture. He's a big boy, wears big boy pants. When he comes in there, they're just a different vibe, a different aura. You got bounce back seasons from guys like Francisco Lindor. Like, he seemed to really empower his players and put them in really good positions to win. And I just felt like when you have him as your manager, they're just a whole different vibe surrounding your team, and you just get taken a lot more seriously. So I'm giving it to Buck Showalter of the New York Mets.
By the way, that would be his fourth manager of the year with four different teams. Whoa. If that's not a Hall of Fame candidacy coming together, I don't know what is. That doesn't even include his 100-win season managing the 99 Diamondbacks. I think you're right. I think Showalter is going to win. Again, not to be contrarian, but what Snitker did with the slow start that they had and playing 800 ball basically down the stretch, I would not stun me if Snitker wins it. All three of those managers have won before, so it's not like someone's going to be denied their legacy. I would have no problem with any of those three winning. I think it's going to go to Showalter. I would probably vote for Snitker, but you can convince me either way. This one's the toughest one to predict. Moving on to the National League Rookie of the Year, Brendan Donovan of the Cardinals. Congratulations, you're a Rookie of the Year finalist. Now sit down, you're not winning anything. Michael Harris, the second, not the first. And Spencer Strider, both of Atlanta, are the two front runners. And I'll just tell you that, to me, it's a complete coin toss. I think both made an impact. Both were very good. I would probably give it to Harris today, but you could just as easily convince me of Strider. Either one could win.
Yeah, this one is going to be tough. It's going to an Atlanta Brave. We know that. And Brendan Donovan.
Very brave prediction on your part. Very brave prediction on your part.
Yeah, very, hot take there is going to Atlanta Brave. Brendan Donovan was good. I'm more mad about Jake McCarthy not being that third finalist, but I can't argue Brendan Donovan was good. Also, the Cincinnati Reds starter Lodolo was a pretty good candidate as well. Jake McCarthy, 20 plus stolen bases, one of the fastest players in baseball, should have been more maybe in consideration. Just want to shout him out real quick. But back to the topic at hand, which Braves should have won it? I mean, this one's really close. Spencer Strider had a fantastic season as a starting pitcher, almost 14 strikeouts per nine innings, set the Braves franchise record with like 17 strikeouts in one game at one point this season. But I think I'm going to give it to Michael Harris, because I think the fact that he was a center fielder, I think he makes a little bit more of an impact day to day for the Braves. And he did lead all rookies in WAR, a stat I don't love, but it's still like a little fun fact for himself. And he had basically a 2020 season with like a 300 average and an 850 OPS. He basically put up all-star numbers as a rookie. So I'm going to give to Michael Harris, even though it's like razor thin between him and Spencer Strider.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I get either one. Okay, let's blast through this. I mean, this one should not be a long conversation. American League Rookie of the Year, Stephen Kwan, Julio Rodriguez, Adley Rutschman. Do we have any controversy on this one?
No, I think we're all giving it to Julio Rodriguez. I mean, he basically had like a damn near 30-30 season and was the best player in the lineup that made the playoffs for the first time in over 20 years. As a rookie, Adley Rutschman's going to be one of the best catchers. He's the next Buster Posey or whatever. Stephen Kwan had himself a nice season as well, but I think this is going to be borderline, if not unanimous, for Rookie of the Year in the American League.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is an absolute surefire bet that he is going to take that spot. And by the way, if you're going to be making any bets, get it ready.
Hold on.
Caught you off guard?
Hey, there we go.
Hey, got a bet online. Get your latest odds and trends at the number one source for sports betting information, stats, and analysis. You can find out about every professional and amateur league out there, from football to basketball to soccer, and even esports. They've got it all at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you'll find those at BetOnline as well. They're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. Thanks so much for making Lockdown MLB your first listen today. For your second listen today, check out Lockdown Diamondbacks. Then go check out Lockdown Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard, behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Today is available on this app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. Let's just quickly blast through some of these other ones here. The other really no-brainer. By the way, congratulations to Max Fried and Julio Urias for being National League Cy Young finalists. It's Sandy Alcantara of Miami.
Yeah, he's the runaway. The real debate was, should a Zach Gallen been the fourth finalist? Should he have taken the Max Fried or Julio Urias spot? I made the case on the podcast the other day. I really want to be up in arms, but when you really look at the numbers, it's dangerously close between a Fried and a Zach Gallen. So I can't be too mad that Fried is named a finalist over Gallen, but I still think Gallen's season was slept on. Go look at the numbers. He had one point, went over a month without allowing an earned run. I think he's going to be a finalist next season and potentially win a Cy Young Award.
Zach Gallen should have been number two. In my opinion.
Okay, there we go, Sully.
I would have knocked off Julio Urias.
That's fair.
Who had a good year, but I mean, to me, Urias and Fried should have been battling for third place. No, Zach should have been about right behind Sandy Alcantara.
I agree.
And I think the fact that Fried and Urias were doing so for you know, winning teams may have helped, but yeah, you know, Alcantara played for the freaking Marlins. I totally agree with you. He was a difference making pitcher.
I think that's the main reason, because Fried and Julio Urias were on like 200-win teams that made the postseason. I think the D-backs are more competitive. He would have gotten a few more looks maybe, but Gallen led the league in hits per nine, led the league in whip. He had at one point 44 straight innings pitched without an earned run. Like, Zach Gallen's season was really incredible. Zach Gallen knows he slept on and he knows he might be overlooked, but I think with Brent Strom now as the pitching coach, we already saw what year one Zach Gallen looks like under Brent Strom. I'm very curious to see what year two looks like. And Merrill Kelly, he's not going to be a finalist, but I think he could be finishing the top 10 of Cy Young votes for the National League as well. He's a workhorse. Yeah.
Now, I think the most slighted person in the month of November has been Framber Valdez, because I think Framber Valdez should have been the World Series MVP, and he should have been a Cy Young finalist, and he got neither. Again, Dylan Cease, Alek Manoah, both had fine years. Valdez's teammate, Justin Verlander, is probably going to win. But, I mean, I could have made a case for Valdez to win the Cy Young Award, let alone be a finalist.
Yeah, Valdez, I think, potentially should have been a finalist over Alek Manoah. I think that top four in the American League was incredibly close. Valdez, I think, what, set like a major league record or one of the greatest seasons of all time in terms of how many quality starts he had in the season. I think he might have set like a major league record for quality starts consecutively. And he also led the American League in complete games, innings pitch, shutouts, batters face, and home runs per nine innings. So Valdez had himself an incredible season. Manoah was right there. I mean, he had a better ERA. Dylan Cease, I think, was maybe the biggest workhorse we saw in the American League this past year. So I definitely have him as a finalist. I agree with you. Valdez should be the other finalist. But Justin Verlander, even though he only pitched like 175 innings because of injury, I think he was just so much better in the innings pitched than everyone else. Led the American League with a 1.75 ERA, which is insane for a 39-year-old pitcher coming off the injury he had last season where he basically didn't pitch the whole year. So I'm giving it to JV for the season he had and still being an ageless wonder at damn near 40.
Yeah, I would give it to him too. I'm just surprised that Valdez didn't get the love. That's fair. I'm a very fair man.
I think it's harder to be a finalist when you're like the number two starter in your rotation, despite being, you know, maybe the number two pitcher in the American League.
Okay, the National League MVP, you have the two Cardinals, Arenado and your buddy Goldschmidt. And then you have Manny Machado. I think you can make an intriguing case for any one of those three. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the easiest to wipe off Arenado because I don't think he was the best player on his team, so it's hard for me to give him the MVP. Manny Machado, I thought maybe is the closest to a Paul Goldschmidt. I'm giving it to Goldie, not just because he's the former D-backs guy and the Locked On Diamondbacks guy, but he was basically for most of the season, the guy leading the Triple Crown race. I thought he just across the board had the best offensive stats. Maybe Manny Machado had a tougher workload without Fernando Tatis there pre-trade deadline, but after the trade deadline, he was able to get some more help in there. I thought Paul Goldschmidt from start to finish was just the best overall player, and the Cardinals kind of had like a better season than the Padres as well. So I'm giving it to Goldie, who also won a Gold Glove Award. I know Nolan Arenado won the Platinum Glove. Some people think Nolan Arenado, his defense is more based on reputation than what he's actually doing nowadays. I haven't looked into the numbers, but I know some Locked On hosts believe it's more reputation than actual production for Arenado when it comes to defense. But I'm giving it to Paul Goldschmidt, who I think had a fantastic season. And you look back at that Paul Goldschmidt trade for the D-backs, Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, and Andy Young, which would you rather have right now, that trio or Paul Goldschmidt, who's still winning MVPs this many years later?
I'm going Goldschmidt on all the accounts. The great debate is on the AL MVP. By the way, congratulations, Jordan Alvarez, for being a finalist. Now sit down. Judge and Otani, because Otani is a very good hitter and a very good pitcher, he adds value to a team that it would take a historic season to knock him off of the MVP perch, in my opinion. And guess what? That's exactly what Aaron Judge did. I think anything short of the season that Aaron Judge had, I would be completely in the Shohei Otani camp. Kind of like, you know, Miguel Cabrera 10 years ago winning the Triple Crown over Mike Trout was what clinched it for me. You know, a truly great all-time season. This is not at all a slight on Shohei Ohtani, but I believe that this is Aaron Judge's award.
I think you and I are lockstep on this. I'm sorry, Angels fans. Basically, how I feel is every season we should come into the year where Ohtani penciled in as the MVP, like you're saying. And then if someone has a historic season like Judge just had, then I think he should be awarded the MVP because I think what Judge did for the Yankees was a little bit more valuable than what Shohei Ohtani did for the Angels, because I don't think the Yankees win as many games without the offense that Aaron Judge was able to produce on a night-to-night basis. I think, actually, I don't like to play the hypothetical game, but I think they needed more of the offense from Judge than that duality that Ohtani could have brought to the New York Yankees team. And I'm not saying if Judge is on the Angels, they're all of a sudden a playoff team or anything like that, but I think Aaron Judge meant a little bit more to the Yankees team because I really felt like Aaron Judge tweaked an ankle, hurt himself, was out for a couple months. Like, I just don't know where they get the production from with Stanton in and out the lineup. You're counting on like a mid-30s Anthony Rizzo to all of a sudden be your offensive producer, like, or yeah, Josh Donaldson. Hopefully he still comes around 12 months later after the trade. Like, if Aaron Judge got hurt, I felt like they would have had nothing in there. And when you consider, like, it was a, I don't want to call it like the clean home run record or anything like that, but it is the Yankees franchise home run record. And we know how
it's
many
the American League home run record.
Yeah. And it's the American League home run record. So we know how many all-time greats the Yankees have had. And this was the best home run season we've ever seen from that. And it was one of the best home run seasons we've seen since like the Barry Bonds or the last 20 plus years, however you want to, you know, arbitrate the years as well. So I'm giving it to Aaron Judge. I'm sorry, Ohtani, you're going to win it pretty much every other season. I think you should be penciled in every year. But if someone has a historic season like Aaron Judge did this past year on a team that makes the playoffs, like I still value team success. Like, I know one player can't make the difference, but if a guy's having that kind of incredible season on a team that's making the playoffs versus a guy that was on a team that got his manager fired, I'm still giving it to Aaron Judge, even though it's not Ohtani's fault that his team wasn't good.
Well, let's get that brings us to another question here, because I think that the single most important free agent we have out there is Aaron Judge. And he did not accept the 5-6 year offer they gave at the beginning of the year. Said, I'm going to see how I can do this year. Whoopsie, it's 62 homers. I predict he's going to go back to the Yankees, because I think the Yankees realize that, like a game of Jenga, if you remove Aaron Judge from this team, yeah, they won 99 games this year, but I think that they know that this offense is razor thin if you remove Aaron Judge from it. And if he leaves, I don't know exactly how wins above replacement is calculated, but I'll do my own calculation. I think they'll go from 99 wins to two or three games above 500. This is a borderline playoff team if you remove him from it. Do you think he's coming back to the Yankees?
Yeah, I think he's coming back to the Yankees too, because if you're the Yankees, like, what kind of hit does that do to the Yankees brand? If you're a team with the 27 World Series, you're trying to get back to the World Series, you're still trying to hold up this evil empire and the status of being the Yankees. If you let guys like Aaron Judge go and walk in free agency after coming off a historic season, a homegrown talent, if you let that guy go in free agency because you don't want to pay him that seventh or eighth year, you're going to look like a clown if you're the New York Yankees franchise. You can't let a guy like Aaron Judge go, especially when you consider the suitors that are going to go after the Yankees, because it's going to be the Dodgers of the world. It's going to be the New York Mets of the world. It's going to be the Boston Red Sox of the world. Like, it's going to be your biggest competitors, your biggest rivals, teams in your market, teams that you're battling against to be, you know, the cream of the crop in the entire Major League Baseball. So if you're the New York Yankees, I don't think there's any chance in the world you can let Aaron Judge go, because I think it would do too much damage to the brand and the reputation of this Yankees franchise.
I completely agree with you and everything you said. Hey, let's take a quick peek at some of the other, just quickly go through some of the other big free agents before we talk a little bit about the D-backs here.
Oh,
Jacob DeGrom, I think, is good as gone. I think he's going to go to Texas. I mean, he's from Texas. He's, like, apparently has already contacted them. I think this would be a gut punch to the Mets. But I think, you know, the Rangers spent a lot of money last year, and now they brought in Bruce Bochy. They want to make a run at it, whether that's ill-timed or not. I think DeGrom should just start buying a house in Dallas right now.
I think the Rangers are going to be the biggest sharks in the water this offseason. I think they're going to go out there and try to do the Philadelphia Phillies model, or just repeat what they did last year and just spend a whole bunch of money this offseason and really try to load up on pitchers and get a couple more players in that lineup. But for Jacob DeGrom, I still feel like the New York Mets are going to try and retain him, because I think he's just too much of a legend in New York. He's considered one of the greatest pitchers of all time. If you can get a healthy DeGrom for a few more years, he's going to have one of the greatest historical careers of all time. And for Stephen Cohen, I can't imagine him being the dude that wants to spend money, being the dude that wants to get every top player in the building. I can't imagine him letting a guy of Jacob DeGrom's talent and caliber just walk out the door. I know he's going to be expensive. I know he's had health and injury history, and they already have Max Scherzers and some really other good starters in that rotation, but I find it really hard to believe Stephen Cohen's like, yeah, I'm not going to pony up the money for DeGrom, who's one of the best players we've ever seen pitch in a Mets uniform.
I think you're right, but I still think the Rangers are going to overpay.
I think they're going to offer all the money in the world.
For the second straight year, we're going to have an unbelievable shortstop class. with Carlos Correa opting out of his deal with Minnesota. Trey Turner is a free agent with the leaving Los Angeles for reasons I still don't understand. Xander Bogaerts is a free agent. Why the Red Sox didn't lock up him, I still don't get. And Dansby Swanson is also available. Another world. I mean, you have four shortstops who are not only all-star caliber, not only young enough to still make an impact, but have all been World Series champions, are all available at the same time. Now, let's just go over the four. Because the other big free agent is Justin Verlander. He's going back to the Astros. We all know that.
You think?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I got a team that he might be able to go to, Sully.
Oh, where? If you say Arizona, the show's over.
No. It's a team you just brought up. He doesn't even have to leave the state. Why not just go to the Rangers?
I think he's happy in Houston. He's got the Astros with their lineup and their pitching staff are as good as any to get back to a third straight World Series. I think he's fine. And he's the only other possibility, I think, is if he wanted to end his career in Detroit. And I think that ship has sailed. I think he wants to be in another World Series. I think Houston's the place to be, not Texas.
Because I don't know what the Astros front office is now doing with all the shakeups they've been doing recently with their GM and their assistant GM and everything. So I don't know how that affects the Justin Verlander market for them.
I think he's going to come back for one more year and call it a career and go back to his supermodel wife and count millions of dollars and play with his World Series rings. It's a good life.
Fair. He's got a great-looking wife over there.
So you have Swanson, Turner, Correa, and Bogaerts. Let's find the landing spots for those four. Because you have four big paying teams salivating for a shortstop. If Bogaerts leaves, the Red Sox need a shortstop. Although they could slide Trevor Story over to short. That may have been their plan. New York, the Kiner Falefa experiment blew up in their face. Mm-hmm. If Atlanta may want to dip their toe into it, Philadelphia has a hole at shortstop. I'm sure they would like to be able to improve the squad. And if Trey Turner leaves, Los Angeles will need one. And then there are teams like Baltimore Baltimore is probably going to want to make a splash. And there's always a surprise team, because who saw Corey Seager and Marcus Semien last year going to Texas? So let's find landing spots for those four.
Let's go one by one.
One by one. Trey Turner.
Okay, for Trey Turner, I have here, I think this is going to be the boldest prediction I have for these shortstop predictions, but I think this team is going to be waiting in the wings. This team won the World Series a few years ago, and since then, they basically remodeled their whole roster. We thought coming into last year, they were just tanking, and then by the end of the season, you're like, whoa, how did they finish the last month of the season with like 11 straight wins? This is the Chicago Cubs. They have a better pitching staff than people realize. They have a pretty young rotation. Their bullpen was very good last year. It's their lineup that's not very talented. We'll see what they do with their catcher, Contreras. But I think they maybe want to bring in a Trey Turner. They basically, that old Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, you know, from a few years ago, all those guys are gone from that World Series team pretty much in their lineup. They got Ian Happ. They don't really have a lot of other players in their lineup. So I think they're going to try to look at Trey Turner, kind of do the Texas Rangers model. This will be the first year of spending money, keep working toward the postseason, try to get to a 500 team, then maybe next year go even all more in to make the playoffs. But I think it starts with Trey Turner as your first building block this offseason.
I'm picking him going to Philadelphia. I think he'd be a good fit for the Phillies. I think the Phillies got to the World Series a year ahead of time, and they've primed the pump, and they'll put him into the spot. I think it'll be a perfect fit. I'm not discounting what you're saying with Chicago, but I think that he would be a great fit there.
Yeah, an early report seemed to be that the Phillies are like the favorites for Trey Turner, because reportedly him and Bryce Harper, two former Washington Nationals guys, might want to reunite again in Philadelphia.
Reunited, don't it feel so good? Meanwhile, Red Sox fans pulling their hair out of their head looking at Xander Bogaerts. What do you think?
Yeah, for Xander Bogaerts, unfortunately for Red Sox fans, I don't know what the Red Sox front office is doing. They seem intent on letting their best players walk or trade them while bringing in overpriced guys like Trevor Story. I would have loved for them to get in the Trey Turner market. I think an all-white, you know, up the front from your shortstop and second baseman up the middle of the field, I think that would be pretty interesting. I don't think you see that too much in baseball. But for the Red Sox, I think they're unfortunately going to lose Xander Bogaerts, and I think he's going to the team that you just mentioned, the Philadelphia Phillies, because I think they're in for a shortstop. We already just talked about how they might be in on Trey Turner, but Dave Dombrowski won a World Series with the Red Sox with Xander Bogaerts already as a shortstop, so he's already seen what that man could do. Bogaerts is a big boy. He's a leader in the clubhouse, and he's just so underrated offensively. Like, if you look at Bogaerts' stats among all shortstops, like over the last 5 or 6 years, he's basically one of the most productive shortstops in baseball that we don't talk about. 20-plus home runs, a near 300 average, 800-plus OPS every single season, RBI producer for you. I think he's going to go to the Philadelphia Phillies. The Red Sox are going to lose out on one of their greatest homegrown stars over the last 20 years.
I do agree that he's going to go. Red Sox fans, if you want to feel that homegrown superstar feeling, winning World Series titles, buy yourself a Dodger hat, because Xander Bogaerts is going to reunite with Mookie Betts.
No, Sully. Don't say that.
Okay, we got two more. We got Dansby Swanson, and we have Carlos Correa. Where do you have Swanson going?
You just threw me for a loop with Bogaerts to the Dodgers. I couldn't imagine Dodgers.
Are you wounded?
I'm wounded after that. That sent me for a little tizzy. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little dizzy after hearing that one. But for Dansby Swanson, he's my least favorite shortstop on the market. I think if you give Dansby Swanson a long-term deal, I think he will be the biggest albatross among all these guys, because I like Dansby Swanson, a great defensive player, but I think his offense will tail off by the time he hits his early 30s, mid-30s. I think that's where you'll find start to see him start to decline. But if it's like a five-year deal, I wouldn't be too mad for Dansby Swanson there. But I think he's staying with his team, the Atlanta Braves. I think we all forget to tie the D-backs in here. They drafted him number one overall and then traded him immediately for, I believe, in the Michael Waka deal?
Shelby Miller deal.
I was like, which one of these young pitchers was it? But yeah, and the Shelby Miller deal, who were just terrible, just atrocious for the D-backs right away. And then Dansby Swanson turns out to be a really good shortstop and one of the best shortstops we see in baseball defensively. So I think he's going to stay with Atlanta. And if Atlanta wants to unload some money after giving Dansby Swanson a deal, I don't know why, but Acuna and the Braves just seem to be so weird. The vibes and the chemistry there seem to be weird. So I think they're going to prioritize the Austin Rileys and the Dansby Swansons of the world. And then I could see a guy like Ronald Acuna potentially getting moved.
I think he's staying with Atlanta. I think he knows he has a good fit there. I think he feels that's a good chance to win again. And I think the Braves are a very smart team. I have a landing spot for Carlos Correa. Now, do you think he's landing?
I
have mine. I want to hear your.
Okay.
It'd be interesting if we pick the same team.
Okay, well, we won't, because we won't pick the same team, because the team I'm picking for Carlos Correa, I think it would be really funny for him to join the new evil empire, because the Yankees, not the Yankees, Sully, you thought maybe I was going to say the Yankees, not the Yankees, the real evil empire, that Los Angeles Dodgers. Go join the team that you beat via cheating. I think that would be so phenomenal. I don't know what would happen on Twitter. Twitter right now is in flames anyway, but I don't know what happened just in social media in general. The Astros fans, the Dodgers fans, I don't know how those two worlds would collide and all that. So bringing Carlos Correa to the Dodgers, I just think would inflame so many different parts of the MLB universe and narratives and storylines. So I think that would be really fun to see.
Baltimore.
Oh, okay. They just keep going to small market teams.
No, I think Baltimore sees that they are on the verge of something. They've got a lot of young talent on that team, and small market, my butt. This team, when things are going, have a full house and a pile of money.
Rock.
And they are, he signed with Minnesota last year because he was supposed to play that I'm the veteran, wily veteran. For a while it worked because Minnesota was in first place for a gigantic chunk of last year. With the Rutschmans and all the other young players on that team, insert Carlos Correa as a keystone in the middle of that team, and Baltimore wants to make a run, and you saw that the fans showed up when the team started playing, and they actually made it for 2 days in August and September, the Orioles got a wild card spot. We were like tied for a wild card spot for a couple of days. And you just saw that the fans were so drooling to have a team they can get behind. I think they'll probably overpay for him. They'll probably give him too many years and probably overpay. But for Baltimore, they're paying for him to be that first sort of keystone of, all right, we're no longer hoarding prospects. We're making a run. And I think a signing like that has an impact not just for the players, but what other thing is happening right now? They're trying to sell season tickets.
Okay.
And there was a bit of a bad taste in people's mouth that when they went on that winning streak and they started to play well, they traded away Mancini and they traded away Lopez. They said, wait a minute, why are you trading away? We're in contention. Why are you trading away fan favorites? And so this way, okay, we're not doing that anymore. We just did that because we felt like we could get something for them. Now we're putting in, they need to make a splash in free agency. And the other wild thing that we're both predicting is for the second straight year, there's a surplus of superstar shortstops out there, and none of them are going to the New York Yankees, the team that everyone always accuses of signing all the major players.
Yeah, the Yankees haven't done that in a while, and I think part of it's because they
since
got
to Gerrit Cole was really the last one over the last 10, 15 years that they've done.
Yeah, and Gerrit Cole was now one of the highest paid players in baseball, and they're going to have to do that again this offseason with Aaron Judge. I think that's one of the reasons they won't get in the shortstop market, because they're like, oh, we might have to give $300 to $400 million for Aaron Judge. We're not going to have enough money to get another $200 million for Trey Turner. Like, they're not going to spend $500 million on two players this offseason. So I think they're going to go out there, give a fat contract to Aaron Judge, and then try to live on the margins and try to find those $10 to $15 million players, maybe the $8 million players to fill out the rest of their roster.
All right, we're here. I'm going to wrap up here with our dear, dear, close compadre, Miller Thomas. We're not going to talk about the Padres for a second. I want to bring up something with the Arizona Diamondbacks, just as our last little segment here. I am at baseballreference.com, the single greatest website in the history of the planet Earth. I know neither you and I are big war guys, but they list the top 12 players of war from the previous season. And I did this for the Reds when I had Jeff Carr on, and I point out the number one player on that list was wearing a different hat because Luis Castillo got traded in midseason, which is a bad sign that your top war player is basically on another team. But here's something I've never seen before. Number nine for war on last year, the picture of the fellow who's number nine, he's not wearing a Diamondbacks hat. He's wearing a Reno hat. It's Trey Jameson.
Okay.
That when you think about who are some of the top players, one of them played three more games than I did last year for the team. the best part of this team was obviously Zach and Merrill at the top of the rotation. If you said, okay, their strength was going to be the rotation, but Bumgarner was going to have another down year, that's a strange world we're living in. But I picked Alec Thomas to be the rookie of the year this last year. That didn't work out, but he was an everyday player.
Yeah,
and they actually did get some production out of Varsho. They get some production out of, still Ketel Marte is still hanging around. Christian Walker, you know, he's not a long-term solution, but he's hanging around. There were some highlights for Diamondbacks team that avoided 90 losses.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what direction you want me to go in here, but I'll just freaking rant on the D-backs really quickly, because I do think this D-backs team is solid. I think they had a really good season. Obviously, we didn't make the postseason or anything like that, but after winning like 50-something games last year, to add 20-plus wins this past season, in the second half of the season, the D-backs had a plus run differential in the second half, only two games below 500. And at one point in the month of September, they did pass the Giants in the standings for third place. So I do believe in this D-backs team, that they're not too far from the wild card, and I do think they can make some noise in the regular season next year for three specific reasons, Sully, that I'll run down really quickly for the listeners. Number one, I think they're going to be great at creating havoc on the bases. This team has a lot of team speed. They were fourth in the National League in stolen bases this past year. They're going to get even more stolen bases next year because you'll get a full season of Corbin Carroll, who, if you go on StatCast by Sprint Speed, the fastest player in baseball. Number seventh, fastest player in baseball, Jake McCarthy, who just had over 20 stolen bases as well. Josh Rojas had 20 stolen bases. Dalton Varsho is a 20 stolen base guy just waiting in the wings. And then Alec Thomas is another potential 20 stolen base guy. So you could have 100 stolen bases or more just from those five to six players. Number two, their defense is going to be a vacuum next season in the outfield. Corbin Carroll is considered maybe the best defensive outfield prospect coming up through the minor leagues this past year. He's going to be in left field all year. Alec Thomas was arguably the best defensive center fielder in baseball this past season. He's going to be playing more next season in center field. And then Dalton Varsho, he only played like 60-something innings, 70-something innings in right field this past year. But if you go by the metrics, defensive run saved, anything, despite playing like half the innings in right field compared to a Mookie Betts who won the Gold Glove, he had better stats across the board, the same, if not better stats across the board than a Mookie Betts. Dalton Varsho was the best defensive right fielder in the outfield this past season, despite playing like half the innings there than every other outfielder. So their defense is going to be a vacuum next season. Christian Walker was the best defensive first baseman this past year. That's why he won the Gold Glove. And then number three, you just mentioned Dre Jameson. The D-backs have a trio of young starting pitchers that Brent Strom can make an impression on. Ryan Nelson gave up 3 earned runs and 18 innings pitched, small sample size, but 2 of those was against the Padres. The other was against the Dodgers. Dre Jameson, 4 earned runs and 24 innings pitched, another small sample size, but 2 of those starts was against the Giants, 1 against the Dodgers, 1 against the Padres. And then Brandon Pfaadt pitched most of the season in AAA, but he was the first pitcher since 2011 to eclipse 200 strikeouts in the minor leagues. This D-backs team just needs to figure out the bullpen. It's been the biggest issue for this team during the Mike Hazen era. They haven't been able to figure out a closer. They haven't been able to figure out a setup man. They haven't been able to figure out a setup man for the setup man. Their bullpen has been trash. Joe Mantiply and Kyle Nelson are like the only two bullpen guys you could trust in their bullpen right now. So they can figure that out. I think the offense and the lineup will be dynamic next year. They still have 2 good frontline starters in Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, with some young starters behind them. Got to get off the massive Bumgarner contract. I think he could be potentially traded this offseason. D-backs will have to put a lot of money down for that, but I could see this D-backs team making a wild card run next year if they're able to figure the bullpen out. I concede my time.
Do you think the D-backs would try to overpay for a slugger like a Brandon Nimmo or someone like that to plug into their lineup?
I think it depends what position it is. If it's like a third baseman, maybe a shortstop, I could see maybe a shortstop because I think that's a really weak position for the D-backs. Nick Ahmed and Geraldo Perdomo, if you were going to overpay for a slugger, I think it would be one of those positions. I don't think it would be the outfield because they have such a logjam in the outfield right now with Alec Thomas, fair Dalton Varsho, Corbin Carroll, Jake McCarthy. Plus, they still want to call up Drew Jones in the next couple years. And they got a guy like Stone Garrett, who's a rookie this past year. Like, they're loaded in the outfield. I think if the D-backs are going to overpay for a slugger, you look at that shortstop or third base position. I would love a Trey Turner in the building. I would love a Bogarts in the building. But who I would really love in the building, my 2023 free agent prediction, I would love for the Arizona Diamondbacks, go give me that Boston Red Sox third baseman, Rafael Devers, and bring him to the desert, man.
Well, look, at you've brought me to the desert on a horse with no name. And we'll talk a little D-backs. We'll talk a little bit of everyone else. Hey, Miller Thomas, tell people where they can follow your terrific podcast.
Yeah, follow Locked on Diamondbacks on all your podcasting platforms, of course. And go hit subscribe on Locked on Diamondbacks on YouTube, please.
And you can find us at Locked on MLB Pods on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Thanks so much for making Locked on MLB and Locked on Diamondbacks your first listen. Second listen, make that be, as I mentioned before, Locked on Sports Today. The games that matter, get beyond the scoreboard. Come on, get behind the scenes with Locked on experts like the two of us. It's available on your app that you're listening to us right now, maybe YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. That podcast is called Locked on Sports Today. Talking free agents, awards, and the D-backs with the host of Locked on D-backs, Miller Thomas. This has been the Locked on MLB Locked on Diamondbacks crossover, 14th day of November, 2022. I'm Russ Paul Francis Sullivan. Let's fist pump. You can Call me Sully. Fist bump this. Fist bump it. Fist that. Fist.